Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James.
The Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner.
Girl, happy corner.
Happy corner to you too.
Happy corner day. What are we doing?
Well, this week I'm going to be talking about 10, well, a little under 10, because I want to save some mystery for you guys to find out. Indigenous authors for you to check out.
Ooh.
We need to diversify our reading book list, and I think you're diversifying something else too.
And okay, I am going to tag team it, pass the baton over here, because I'm going to continue on with the list of 10, and I actually will read the whole entire list, because I will not leave anything to the imagination. But if you thought that you, if you're missing Moonlight and you thought the Oscars, like you're like, well, it's a little too white and straight. Well, don't worry. It got you covered because there are 10 LGBT black films that you need to take a peek at as well to diversify what you're looking at.
Yes. We're just keeping you up to date for everything that you should be reading and watching and getting your life together.
And we're also going to talk about, you went to see a play. You saw a musical.
I saw Book of Mormon. You also watched the Oscars.
I watched the Oscars, and a monumental television event happened we need to talk about.
How to Get Away with a Scandal.
Girl, I don't know if you saw it, but we need to talk.
Yes, we do. James.
That's my name. Don't you wear it out.
I am not, and we are back for another week.
Hitting them high notes.
You know, mid-range.
You know, you're like a Fergie.
No.
Okay, no.
That's not
too
nice.
Soon?
That
okay.
was not
was
nice
mean?
Of you.
She used
yes!
to. Oh, I don't know. I can't keep up. I don't know who's in, who's out.
We go listen to the past episode.
Should I go back?
Yeah, I think you need to revisit
back.
That
okay.
and realize thought, why that was not a nice thing to say.
Oh, okay.
Say.
I'll take a look back. Fergalicious stuff. Happy Oscars.
Yeah, I did not watch it this year.
Oh, okay. I did. Let me fill you in.
Okay.
Boring as fuck. But I think
yeah.
but I think that's okay. I think we don't need. I feel like I'm still traumatized from last year's Moonlight debacle.
Yeah, that was a lot.
I was literally. It was back at Ashley Nicole Black's house. It was a redo because we were like, we needed to rehab this party. And we were even like leading up to the award with Warren Beatty and who is it? Lady McLuffin. Old lady.
No,
Faye Dunaway?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I was just going to say she's a famous actress. This is terrible.
I was like, famous old white lady. Yes, her. Lady McGuffin is the kids call her. And so they had that
Bonnie
coming back.
Bonnie and Clyde. It's Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, is that their thing? Okay.
Yeah, they were in Bonnie and Clyde together.
Missed it.
well, yeah, you weren't born
before
yet.
My time. I'm sorry. But anyways, they had them come back out and like present. We thought they'd do like a bit. The whole entire thing was already too triggering.
It was terrible. I don't like that they did that.
But you know what
I
they
don't.
Did? They did not do a bit at all. They just read the award. And so
good. I'm glad. I'm it. So glad they didn't do a bit because that would have been awful. And that's like unfair to Barry Jenkins
yes.
at all.
Who,
like he's the one that truly should have gotten some apologies from the Academy.
He should have been the one to like hand out the award or something. I just feel like
you would think.
Why wouldn't they bring out instead? They just brought out the two kerfuffles who had already done.
Maybe they asked him, and he was like, "No, thanks."
He did say in an interview that he's still traumatized and triggered from that. Like you know, evening.
I would be too. He didn't even really get to celebrate it that much.
Yeah, it feels like I forget that. Like, oh yeah, it did win Best Picture, but it just feels like that moment was just so. You know,
lost.
Wrong. But the movie where the lady fucks a fish, that won all the awards.
You know what? I don't like that people have been saying that.
Why?
Because I feel like the movie is so much more than that.
I haven't seen it, so I'm just going off of what all my funny friends are saying.
See, yeah, I saw it. And
does she fuck a fish, though?
Yes, but like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the movie is just to kind of see it as that is reductive to the movie. And I get it. It's funny. Like, I feel like
I love a joke.
I don't know. I know you do love
a
joke.
Love a joke.
I guess I'm glad that it wasn't Dunkirk, that one.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like at least like Shape of Water had like disability representation, sure. black representation, LGBTQ representation. Mm. The director is
Mexican.
Guillermo del Toro. He hasn't won anything in a long time. Mm-hmm. The makeup was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was a deserving movie. I don't know if it like was like an amazing movie, but I do feel like there's so much more to the movie than just like a lady having sex with a fish man.
Yeah, I guess it just never caught my fancy. I'm sure I love me some Guillermo del Toro. And I'm sure it's on my list of when I'm on an airplane, I will definitely be checking it out. I guess like I just was so, you know, there's so many movies that were nominated, so I definitely think it had an effect on, there was 9 movies for Best Picture. 9. And so it definitely was like splitting like the votes of who was gonna get, you know, what. I'm glad that Jordan Peele took home that Oscar.
Original screenplay, first black guy to win.
Right.
Oh my god, amazing. So deserving.
So fucking deserving.
And his speech was like so inspiring because he said that he sat down to write it 20 times, but then eventually finished it and then he won. Like, how inspiring is that for all of us that like keep trying to start and stop projects? Mm-hmm. You know, that's like all like such an inspiration to just be like, no, if you really put your work to it, you can accomplish something and win awards for it. Like, fuck yeah, Jordan Peele. Thank you for being a fucking inspiration and like elevating to this level from Mad TV. Like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I know. And you know, it's so funny. I remember him and Keegan on Mad TV, and I didn't really like him on Mad TV. I think because I was, I loved the old cast so much, and when you're a kid, changes is really hard. But they definitely won me over with like Keanu Peele, and like here he is, doing his thing, and I think it's inspiring to make what matters to you because he never thought this movie was gonna get made, and I think that's the innovation in storytelling that people really need. It's not like the recycled ideas. It's just like the new stuff that like if it matters to you, then like fucking work on it, like you were saying, as many times as it takes to get it done.
I was actually taking in a little bit of theater instead of going to watch the Oscars.
Yeah, what'd you see?
I saw Book of Mormon.
Thoughts?
Interesting.
Okay, yes, good. Good. That's why I was like, ooh, what is he? Let's have a conversation about it. Because I've seen Book of Mormon too. And and people always like, they're like, my nephew's coming into town and someone was like, I was like, what should I take him to see? They're like, Book of Mormon. I'm like, that's an option. I'm not going to.
Yeah. How old is your nephew?
He's like 6. I'm not going to because I don't actually, I don't care for the Book of Mormon. I think I don't care for it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I feel like let's laugh at African people and AIDS. I don't think I talked about this show, and like there's so many jokes about like, ooh, they have African sounding names and it's funny.
That was annoying.
AIDS and it's funny, and it's like, this is a serious. It'd be one, like, it's again, I don't, it'd be different if let's say like it was written by Danai Gurira, or you know, like you know, if there was someone who it's written by 2 white guys, and I used to watch South Park and I used to really like be so into it, but then it got to a point where it was like these 2 liberal quote unquote white guys just feel like they like are the, not the dogma, but like they are the voice of like all of these sort of conversations, and they have like, I feel like they always have these like tell it like it is moments, and this is how it is, and I don't think that there's every conversation, like I don't need to hear their opinions and thoughts on everything, like and things that I don't think that they have the authority to have those thoughts and ideas and opinions on.
Word, I hear you.
Yeah
It was very South Park-y to me.
Totally.
I do feel like for 2012 it had, I don't think that it's aging very well. That's kind of because of the climate that things have turned and the way that it has been, and that now we have a president who literally called countries in Africa shithole countries.
I
don't think that it's aging well, but I do, I'm not, if I think about it in the mindset of 2012,
is that when it came out?
Yeah.
Wow.
I looked it up.
Wow.
I looked it up.
Okay.
I think I saw it maybe 2011.
Yeah, because I think I saw it 3 years ago and it felt like everybody had already seen it, and that's why I was able to get a ticket because it was like starting to normalize, but you know, people had seen.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was no Hamilton.
Yes, that was like that. Like it was. It's time for Hamilton. It was already the Hamilton of its time, and it was, you know, moving on.
It's faded out. Yeah. So like, I feel like I can kind of see why it was controversial at the time, and like, you know, there were funny moments. I can't deny that.
Yeah, absolutely. And great numbers. There's great songs and dance numbers.
It's always fun to see performance. I do love, you know, even though I feel like there was a lot of poking, like borderline not good commentary on African and Africa.
Especially when you live in a world that Wakanda exists now. It's just like,
That's why I feel like it doesn't, that's why it doesn't really, you know, sit well. But at the same time in 2012, 2011, it was like a lot of different issues that were happening in northern Uganda, which is, I do appreciate that they weren't just saying Africa, which is good.
Very true.
They were specifying about that area were happening. And the Mormons weren't looked very good either, but I'm not like making excuses for it. Yeah. You know,
it was very much, I feel like, the zeitgeist of its time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do feel like things have changed so drastically that it's kind of interesting to look at that now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the context is now is way different than it was in 2012.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, it's, I mean, it's still running here in Broadway in New York. Like it, tickets are still high, mighty and high pricey. People are still loving it.
I just put it in the
Woody Allen camp for me of just like, like, but I've seen it. But you know, like the thing that like every
at least that
so
they
many
have
white
roles
people,
for black people.
Yes, I. You know, that's the one thing that I did love. I actually think the exact same thing. I'm like, oh, I could be in this musical. Like, there's a musical that I can be in.
Least half the cast is black. Yeah. You know? So like,
there's that.
They're
creating roles for black people, and they all have like AIDS, and there's just nothing wrong with that. But it's just like, I just don't know that that's coming from a place of like love.
It's a very South Park punchline.
Yes. And I feel like my comedy is moving. Like I'm not in high school anymore. My comedy has like evolved like past that. So and I think the conversation and I think it's just more interesting to get comedy from a diverse group of voices and people. And I can do that now.
And I did. I really enjoyed being in a space to see people performing though.
Yeah.
I always love that whenever I get a chance to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Should we go to my corner?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking about some books by Indigenous people. We are back.
Yes, we are.
And I am bringing an oldie but a goodie to you guys.
Ooh, give me them goodies.
Just dusting off my library jacket, and we are in for another book
list. Is it a jacket
list.
Or is it a cape?
It is a book jacket. Like, you know, the thing that you slip around a book?
Oh, yeah.
Double entendre.
Wow. Yeah. And what I like about it is it's not too sexy, because I don't like my library entendres too sexy, because I get confused. And then I have a boner in the library, and I feel like that's inappropriate. I feel like you've dealt with
It depends on what
library. I feel like you've dealt with enough boners in the library, and you don't need those. So I'm trying to be respectful to you.
It's true. My quota for library boners is fulfilled.
And done and done.
Yeah. So this list is coming to you from Color Lines, once again, one of my favorite blogs that I like to frequent, and I hope all of you guys frequent it as well. And this time I'm bringing you a list that is from an article titled 10 Works from Indigenous Authors to Read Right Now. Now, this is something that I really thought was interesting, because I feel like a lot of times they talk about women authors, I've talked about black authors, I've talked about Asian authors, I've talked about Latinx authors, but I don't think I've talked much about Indigenous authors. And for me, the only person that pops into my mind is Sherman Alexie. So when only one person pops into your mind that is representation, it is time to expand.
Yeah, well, and especially last week's conversation about how the Native American character was cut out of the film version of Annihilation or whitewashed into a white woman. The Native American of her was washed out.
So I'm just going to be giving you some lists. Not all of the authors in the list that I'm going to give you, because I will link it in the show notes. So just go check it out. Feel free to look up these authors, read their works, enjoy their words from a community that may represent you or may represent an idea that you don't know about. it doesn't hurt to dig in.
Yes.
Okay.
Dig in.
First, yeah. The first book is called My Body is a Book of Rules by Alyssa Washuta.
Mm-hmm.
In My Body is a Book of Rules, Alyssa Washuta corrals the synaptic gymnastics of her teeming bipolar brain, interweaving pop culture with neurobiology and memories of sexual trauma to tell the story of her fight to calm her aching mind and slip beyond the tormenting cycles of memory. Now, what I like about this list is... yes, all of the authors on the list are Indigenous authors, Native American authors. They don't always stick with just one topic, mm-hmm. though. Just like how we and our podcast are intersectional, they themselves are intersectional.
Wait, what do you mean? Their lives are about more than just being Native Americans? You mean they are fully dimensional people? That's not what I see on the TV screen.
Who would have fucking known?
It's like, even when you see, like, if you watch on Kimmy Schmidt, the Native American characters, their lives are all about being Native American.
Right. Like, that's the thing that really irritates me. It's like, those of us that are, like, living multiple, all of us are living prismed lives where we have multiple things affecting us. Like, why do minorities have to only be about being that one aspect that is represented and that means something mm-hmm. to the story? Hey, right? Yeah. Like... we all have our own multiple frames. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that one was by Alyssa Washu. So she's talking about, she's dealing with mental illness, bipolar disorder, the cycles of memory. That is fascinating. So check it out. Read it. Alyssa Washu, My Body is a Book of Rules. Her last name is spelled W-A-S-H-U-T-A. All right. Number two list is called Bad Indians, A Tribal Memoir. In this book, Deborah A. Miranda, who's the author, tells stories of her Ohlone, Constanoa, Alien family, as well as the experience of California Indians as a whole through oral histories, newspaper clippings, anthropological recordings, personal reflections, and poems. The result is a work of literary art that is wise, angry, and playful all at once, a compilation that will break your heart and teach you to see the world anew. Doesn't that sound cool?
Yeah.
Sounds like it's like a memoir, but also a historical dip in with primary sources.
It will not be defined. That's what it is. You will not define me.
Damn
subtext.
Right. No. So that one is by Deborah Miranda, and it's called Bad Indians, A Tribal Memoir. The next book is Sovereign Erotics, A Collection of Two-Spirit Literature.
Ooh.
This might, you know, this might invigorate your
I talked about
your boner.
Wow. Okay, we're back on the boner talk. It always catches me off guard when you get nasty or when you have your librarian jacket on. I'm just not expecting it. Because I know you can get nasty because I heard you on the show and they've heard you too. But I just wasn't expecting that. I was just going to politely comment that we've talked about two-spirit people on the show before. Yes.
Oh, we have.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've mentioned them before. Because
awesome.
It's like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that two-spirit people are similar. They're people who are able to, like, how we should be looking at, like, well, it's different because they don't have the same terminologies as us, but it would be sort of similar to people mm-hmm. who possibly might identify as transgender, might be considered two-spirit people, depending on different, you know, again, the words don't necessarily equal the other one, but what I'm saying is that, like, other cultures had a practice and tradition of people not conforming to one specific gender, and they were honored and celebrated as very... heightened, like they were heightened spiritual beings. And so here it is in our country, they're some of the most like endangered and murdered people in our country.
Yeah.
So we got that backwards.
Yeah. And I remember you bringing that up in one of our past mm-hmm. episodes. So you guys should definitely check that out
wherever
as well.
The episode is. Just listen to the whole back catalog.
Well, I mean, if you do, you can find something in there. So in conjunction with that episode, you can read this book. Let me just remind you what the title is. It's called Sovereign Erotics, A Collection of Two-Spirit Literature. It is edited by Kui Lo Dryskill, Daniel Heath Justice, Deborah Miranda, again, and then Lisa Tanonetti. Here's a quick little description. This landmark collection strives to reflect the complexities of identities within Native gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and two-spirits communities. Gathering together the work of established writer and talented new voices, this anthology spans genre, fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and essay, and themes, memory, history, sexuality, I'm going to totally mispronounce this, but it's basically being indigenous, ingenuity.
That's a new word.
Friendship, family, love, and loss, and represents a watershed moment in Native American and indigenous literature, queer studies, and the intersections between the two. Wow.
Hot damn.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah, that, you were right. I did get my boner ready. I want to hear them stories.
No, I just, you know, anything that's like erotics, yeah. That's why I said that. Because of erotics was in there, not because I feel like that was reductive now. I'm trying not to be reductive.
You know what? I just want a sidebar. I've heard the word reductive is making a resurgence into the lexicon. Because I've heard that word so much lately, and I never had.
Oh, really?
And you've said it three or four times already. And so I don't want to be reductive myself, but resurgence is coming.
No, not at all.
Fuck, I was going to say something I don't remember. Probably something not appropriate.
Uh-oh.
Oh, but erotic, you prefer the word erotic to adult. Yeah, back on the erotic train.
Yes!
So I should say I'm watching an erotic movie, but not an adult movie.
Then that makes sense. Yes.
So
separate it. Because if you separate it to erotic now, then when you say an adult movie, you know that it's just a movie for grown people.
Okay.
And not sexy. And it could be sexy. I mean, explicitly. Yeah, I don't
I'm trying to get on board with my sister system. But I see it. Erotic movie to me sounds like you're just saying a fancy name for pornography. But okay.
Yeah. But also maybe more sexual.
Okay, yeah, I do believe that. It's got an NC-17 rating, not a XXX.
Yeah, there we go.
Because if I go to pornporn.com, those aren't erotic thrillers. That's just sex.
Yeah, I do feel like I shouldn't have. I just got distracted by the word erotic in there, because after reading that description, it doesn't sound very saxophone.
No, it's not. It's just, you know, it's an exploration of exploration of sexuality.
Yeah, so put your boner
put
away.
That out. That's inappropriate. And
that is inappropriate.
Also, sidebar, if you go to pornporn.com, you'll find nothing. It's not a website. So
did you really look it up right now?
For the kids, for the corny kids. check your references, librarian.
I feel like they know where to go. Okay, so the next book is called Crazy Horse's Girlfriend by Erica T. Worth. Marguerite is a sharp-tongued, drug-dealing 16-year-old Native American floundering in Colorado town, crippled by poverty, unemployment, and drug abuse. She hates the burnout, futureless kids surrounding her and dreams that she and her unreliable new boyfriend can move far beyond the bright lights of Denver that float on the horizon before the daily suffocation of teen pregnancy eats her alive. Filled with complex characters, homecoming, and being overcome by circumstances of their surroundings, Crazy Horse's Girlfriend thoroughly shakes up cultural preconceptions of what it means to be Native American today. This sounds like a movie.
Yeah, I was already visualizing all of that. What I thought was so interesting too is that, like, you know, touch on your point that you made before, is that these conversations are so dense with the complexities that these cultures represent, and that, like, it's interesting because a lot of those narratives are stories that I've heard that are challenges within the Native original peoples. Sorry, I'm just trying to be as PC as I possibly can. Can I just say Native Americans? Yeah. I have to say that? First peoples?
I mean, I'm not the person. This article says indigenous,
with the indigenous community, I know there's a high, like, I don't know the exact facts, I don't remember them off the top of my head, but the, like, high rates of, like, alcohol abuse and, like, drug abuse, that ends up happening because of the systemic issues and problems that are pushed down onto these communities. And so it's so, like that story. Mm. I'm like, oh yeah, that is such a story that I think represents some of the struggles that are happening within the community.
Check it out. And it sounds like since it deals with teenagers and kind of like a gritty teen novel, this might be something good to like, if you have teens in your life that are looking for something interesting to read, that isn't
Johnny
just like
White Boy,
the same old.
Catcher
yeah,
in the Rye.
Maybe pass this off to them. Just to remind you guys, that was Crazy Horse's Girlfriend by Erica T. Worth. And that's W-U-R-T-H. So the next one is called The Beginning and End of Rape, Confronting Sexual Violence in Native America by Sarah Deer. Right up for this one goes, The Beginning and End of Rape makes available the powerful writings in which Sarah Deer, who played a crucial role in the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act in 2013, has advocated for cultural and legal reform to protect Native women from endemic sexual violence and abuse. These essays point to the possibility of actual and positive change in a world where Native women are systematically undervalued, left unprotected, and hurt. Now, this one is excellent. In especially this climate right now when it's coming to the forefront, we might want to share this with both our brothers and our sisters out there so they can kind of get an idea of what women and the culture, American culture through and through, has been systematically doing to all of us. And it's just interesting to kind of see it from a different viewpoint. This one is nonfiction. It's a collection of essays. So this might be something to look into if you are looking for some non-fiction education on women's rights.
Cool, yeah.
All right. And the last one is called Naming Ceremony by Chip Livingston. The 16 short stories and profound essays that comprise Naming Ceremony, Chip Livingston examines the world we create for ourselves by exploring the names we are called and those we call ourselves. Life as neologism. Somebody help me. Fiction as the idealect for readers to explore the other, the outsider. Livingston's characters express in a word and deed the names that confirm individuality, as well as validating their roles among family, culture, and politics while being mindful of self and sexuality. Deep.
Wow. Self and sexuality? My two favorite things. And how those collide, the intersections between those.
Yeah, you need to check out Naming Ceremony by Chip Livingston. Mm. That one sounds like a big bite to really ingest. And I feel like let's just do one more. Are
you cool with that? Give it to me, mama.
Okay, so this one is called Perma Red by Deborah Magpie Erling. And the write-up says, dreaming of both escape and belonging on the Flathead Indian Reservation in the 1940s, Louise White Elk, a determined and beautiful young woman, comes of age as she is pursued by three dangerous men who will do anything to possess her. Police officer Charlie Kicking Woman, the charismatic Baptiste, and Harvey Stoner, who owns nearly everything around him. So it sounds like a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Check that one out. And if you want more on this information, just check the link. It is Color Lines, written by Samir Rao, and it is called 10 Works from Indigenous Authors to Read Right Now. So get out there, diversify your book list. It is importante.
Yes. And after you diversify your book list, I think it's time for you to diversify your films.
Oh, good.
I don't know about you, but if you're missing Moonlight and it's Oscar are still too white and straight for you, I've got 10 black LGBT films for you to take a peek at.
Ooh, I am excited to hear about this.
Going into a Bullseye interview, I know that it's somebody who does amazing work, but I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that.
Is that possible? Is
that's
that true?
That's possible, yeah.
Should I check with your therapist?
No, but I will be.
Who are you, dude? You all over the place. I got a lot of respect for you, man. That's dope.
Bullseye. Creators you know, creators you need to know. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
That's the Oscars music.
I was going to say, are you playing yourself off so soon? You just got here. Okay.
I just want to think. Oh, shit. Thank you, Bob. I love you, Jesus. All right, bye. Oh, damn. All right. Already got played off my own damn corner.
I know.
So I miss Moonlight. I miss it so goddamn much. And Moonlight for myself and my other queer black brethren, it was such a breath of fresh air. Again, I've never seen my story told on the big screen before. I've seen it on some of the smaller screens if I've gotten to see it on, you know, like a Hulu, like on Amazon or something like that, or Netflix. And so it's just so rare. And I wanted to, if you liked Moonlight, I want to give you a little bit more taste of other films that are also out there. Because as I forget, who's the guy that did The Big Sick? What's that guy's name?
Kumail. Kumail Nanjiani?
Yes, that sounds right to me.
I totally butchered his name, but I'm sorry.
They did a diversity montage in the Oscars, and you know, it had like Ava and Lee Daniels, Barry Jenkins, like everybody in there that was not a straight white dude. And they just did this huge, because like the times are changing in Hollywood. There's a movement, and it's part of the zeitgeist of the conversation. And he said, he was like, listen, I've had to like watch stories with straight white guys, and I've had to try to connect to them and see and empathize with them. And now I think they can do the same for us. And so these stories, no matter who you are, these are films that you should definitely check out. And if you've not seen Moonlight, which, like, I don't know how you're listening to this podcast and you've not seen Moonlight. Oh, my God. But it is a coming-of-age drama that was written and directed by Barry Jenkins.
Yes.
It was an adaptation from a book. Mm-hmm. And the film presents itself in three stages of the main character's life and sort of a coming of age adolescent story, but in a very like his story was not my story because I didn't live in, you know, Miami and the sort of you know, his story is different, but there was still sort of the coming age experience that I could definitely still relate to. And also seeing someone that is of similar skin tone to you, it's like,
beautiful.
That's me. It makes a huge difference to that. So definitely check that out. It is playing all over places. It's you can stream it on YouTube, but you got to pay it. Like,
I was going to be like, what?
So a lot of these, I'm going to tell you where they are. Okay. When I say it's streaming on YouTube, I mean paid $2.99 to stream it.
Okay. Well, $2.99 ain't bad.
$2.99 ain't bad. No, it's not. Give that movie some
$3?
Money.
$3? That's a candy bar.
That's a candy bar. Like, I know you're used to getting all this shit free, but also think about this, people. You don't have to go to Blockbuster Video to go pick it up. Like, it's the comfort of your own home.
It's
We've
true.
Gotten so spoiled. We have gotten so spoiled.
You know what? Like, I may be an old head, but I used to love going to Blockbuster and just being like, what you got, Blockbuster? And just like picking out things and having that conversation and being like, what do you want to pick? What do you want to pick?
Well, Aneka, if you love video rental stores, then you're going to love our next movie.
What's
called
that?
The Watermelon Woman. This is by director... Okay, go with me here.
I'm going with you.
This is by director Cheryl I forgot how to pronounce the name. Cheryl Dunes. It's her film about an African-American lesbian trying to learn the fate of a 1940s Hollywood lesbian couple.
Oh.
And she works at a video rental store.
So the whole...
Yeah, it's a really cute movie. The fashion is like super 90s.
Look at me giving you a lead-in.
They leave you a good video. Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, I should talk about this next one. They work at a video rental store, and it's so cute because you just remember being at a video rental store.
Yeah.
So the lead in it, who's Cheryl, the director is also the lead in the film.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's her working at her video day job. And she wanted to create, this is like one of the first feature films directed by a black lesbian, and she wanted to create stories for black women in the early, that time period, because she was like, no one is telling our stories. And
I love
She was right. No one was telling our stories.
If nobody's doing it, it's time for you to do it. I love that theory.
The movie was made on a budget of $300,000, and it actually got about 31 G's grant from the National Endowment for the Arts.
Nice.
And, so that's also on YouTube. Pay the $3 or on Vudu.
What's Vudu?
Oh, you don't know about Vudu?
I mean, clearly I don't.
Girl, Vudu is another online streaming.
I know it's a religion.
But this is spelled VUDU.
Oh, so okay. VUDU. Okay.
Yeah. If you Google for like videos on voodoo, it's yeah.
It's a religion.
That's a religion that, you know. Yeah. So this next one is called Pariah. This is a really great one.
I've heard about this, yeah.
Yeah. It was circulating on Netflix for a while. I don't think it's on Netflix anymore. And what I love is that this film opens up with defining Pariah as a person without status, a rejected member of society, an outcast. So you can already like set in the tone. This movie is so dope. You know who up in this movie?
Who?
Kim motherfucking Wayans, my favorite Wayans, next to Damon Jr. Wayans. Wayans Jr. Yeah, those two. Them's my favorite. And she is playing all out mama who is just not having it. Her daughter is going through this sort of, it's a coming of age sort of teen movie.
Yeah.
She's figuring out her sexuality. Lesbian coming of age story. Super cute. And the director, it's directed by Dee Reese. And Dee Reese was just, Dee Reese was just nominated for Mudbound, which had Mary J. Blige, who was in it, which sidebar, I watched Mudbound and I thought it was great. Great film. I don't know why Mary J. Blige was nominated. She's good in it. I'm not hating on Mary J. Blige.
I don't know why you're bringing this up. She didn't win. Not- You're kicking her while she's down.
No, she didn't win. I just was surprised that she was also nominated. Performance is great. She's come a long way since Rock of Ages.
We've
come
a long way. We've got to support our black actresses.
And I do. But I also, here's the thing that I'm kind of side-eyeing her nomination is because I think the Academy loves to nominate and award black people for suffering black people. And so that's where my thing was. I think she got the, and not the only reason, but I think they just love to see it. It's like, oh, she's playing a suffering black woman in the 1940s. And I would like to see us being nominated for other awards that are not suffering. Something I like about the movies on this list is that these are not just stories of black queer people suffering. They're
good.
Living fully lived lives. Because a lot of times in our LGBT narratives too, especially like over in the early 60s in the plays that were done, we were always like dying or being so unhappy in the end. And a lot of these stories don't necessarily have that as an ending. Even Moonlight didn't have this like sad feeling where someone, spoiler alert, no one dies in the end.
Which is a relief, you know?
But we usually do. And so I think I'm just so glad.
It's nice to just watch a movie and enjoy it for a different story instead of grief and sorrow.
Yeah, and still there'll be challenges in it, but it doesn't have to be like I'm a slave being whipped or something, which these are important stories, but
they shouldn't be the only stories.
Yeah, and not that that's what Mudbound was about. Also, what I did love about Mudbound is it's part of the narrative was black soldiers fighting in World War II and how they, and the treatment of how, because we are left at Dunkirk, we are left out of those narratives so much.
Yeah, we are.
And as a friend of mine was saying, I didn't see Dunkirk, but she's like, it makes it very hard to follow storylines when all the characters look the same. So I guess in Dunkirk, it was they all look the same. And so throwing that out there. So Dee Reese, so this was a semi-autobiographical story, Pariah. And it really tackles issues too about like gender conformity rituals. Kim Wayans is upset because her daughter won't wear just like regular dresses and things like that. And you've got one parent who's somewhat supportive, thinks it's just going to be a phase, and another one who is not here for it. And so it's just a very just powerful movie. And I feel like it's kind of like the black lesbian Call Me By Your Name, but like more beautiful and came out beforehand. So Call Me By Your Name is the white version of this movie. And so Reese examines and goes through the plight of the woman who embraces her queerness even though the rest of the world does not. So that is on YouTube, Amazon, and Vudu. Every time I say YouTube, I want you to know you better pay.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's a paid YouTube.
This next one is called Tongues United. And I saw this one back in college. It was my first foray into like seeing my people's story being told. And this is like a historic movie that came out and actually helped spark the Pomo Afro Homos. I've talked about them before on the podcast. They were this queer black theater troupe. And I remember when they saw the documentary, they talked about they came out of the theater and they were just like, oh, we now have our stories to be told. They queer black stories had really never been told before, and this was one of the first ones. It came out in 1989.
Cool.
Semi-documentary film directed by Marlon Riggs.
Okay.
He is a filmmaker, educator, professor, poet, gay rights activist. He produced and wrote, directed several television documentaries that also came out. In fact, Stanford has the Marlon Riggs collection, which you can, if you're in Stanford, you can, you know, go and see
Palo Alto.
Yeah, get it, Palo Alto. It's a blend of a documentary and a narrative. It's very sort of, it reminds me of sort of like 90s beat poet film. It's got a lot of like poetry.
Okay, cool.
Is it a genre? But when I say that, you kind of can get an idea of how it is.
Yeah, I can see it. That's why I stopped, because I got it. It makes
sense. It's not a real genre, but that's like what I kind of.
It's a hybrid that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the film's a dissection of the outcast nature of black gay men in white and African American culture, and just how we're just so homeless and don't really have our own, especially at that time in the 1990s, did not have our own sort of culture and identity. We're not seen too gay for the black community, not manly enough for the black community, and too black for the white community. And no one was telling our stories or our narratives. And the film blends documentary footage and personal accounts and fiction as, again, just to identify the gay black community as well. And we had been so silenced before this. And so it was a way for us to get our narrative out. It also talks about AIDS in the community.
Oh, wow.
There's also clips about the civil rights movement, clips of Eddie Murphy performing a homophobic stand-up comedy routine.
Mm.
And which is interesting because some of that is still kind of... I saw Marlon Wayans' stand-up this past weekend, and I don't know. We still have some room to go. He's almost there, but just not quite, even though as he talks about his, you know, daughter, who is a lesbian, you know?
And
so it's interesting. Still room to grow.
Yeah.
And, this one, he had controversy. This Tongues United had controversy as it was going on, too, because presidential candidate Pat Buchanan cited that Tongues United was an example of how President George H.W. Bush was using taxpayers' money to fund pornographic art.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
So that was the conversation that was happening then.
Wow.
This next one is Bessie. You may remember this movie coming out. Remember Bessie?
Bessie,
coming
yes,
out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bessie, which starred unofficial lesbian Queen Latifah. We see you. See you in
the
glass closet.
I mean, she's like in the... she is a glass closet.
Jodie Foster came out. Come on out, girl. Come on out.
Yeah. I mean, she has a long-term girlfriend, right?
Who, Queen?
Yeah.
Okay, well... Come on.
Okay.
Right.
So
just name it, girl. Name it. We love you. We support you. And guess who directed this one? You may remember this one.
Who's that?
Dee Reese. This was.
Oh, wow. Dee Reese is up in it.
That's why I love it, because it's like Dee Reese is one of those names that, like, I just don't feel like it had gotten enough recognition. It's now she's been in the biz.
She's starting to get some. Yeah.
Yeah. And she wrote this along with two other writers, Christopher Cleveland and Bettina Galilios.
Okay.
And the movie stars Michael Keenan Williams as Bessie Smith's first husband.
Mm.
And Monique played Ma Rainey in the film.
Oh.
And Ma Rainey, if you don't know, she was one of the earliest African-American professional blues singers.
Yes.
And one of the first generations of blues singers to record an album. And she was actually even billed as the mother of blues. So Monique holding it down. I love that Monique is just good to see Monique and doing work. I love Monique. She's a great actress.
Completely. She's been kind of going off the handle lately. She talked bad about Oprah. Not a fan of that.
Yeah, I don't know the full story. She also talks about how she had been... I love me some Oprah, but I also do understand that Monique has probably been very bullied in the industry because she doesn't want to play the industry's game.
But why she gotta go after Oprah? What did Oprah do?
Because Oprah came after her because she was like, you need to do press for this film. And she was like, I don't want to do press. This goes back to Precious. And Monique didn't want to play the game. And yeah, that goes back to. So... Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
No.
So yeah, and so there's Bessie that is available on YouTube, HBO Go, Vudu, and Amazon.
Nice, that's on HBO Go.
Yeah,
do you use those passwords, y'all? I know y'all got them.
Share them on the Corner Kids. I'm just kidding.
No, don't do that.
Just kidding. You guys are so lovely that you probably would. Don't do that. Because someone will change your password and lock you out of your account.
Yeah, you don't want that.
So this next one I am super excited about. It is Saturday Church. It is a musical.
Saturday Church?
Saturday Church. You didn't know that church was happening on a Saturday, but this is called Saturday Church. It's a musical. And if you watch the trailer, you already will start crying.
Oh,
and
wow.
It reminds me of the power of musicals that, like, for me, when I really think about musicals, it's not like a friend of mine who's workshopping this musical about Emmett Till. And musicals have the power, like, people sing in a musical because they don't have the words to express it anymore, because music is so powerful.
Right.
And when you can see a musical that can take it to another level to explore an issue, but also have some, but there's moments to have fun, but then it makes the painful moments that much more deep because we're
right.
using music.
Yeah.
This one is directed by Damon Cardassius.
Okay.
So he's got this musical. It's about a gay and gender. It's a gay and gender questioning teen who discovers the New York drag ball scene.
Ooh, fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, so yeah.
Oh, yeah. So much fun. 14-year-old Ulysses, he's living with his mom. His dad dies and his conservative aunt takes him in. Mm. But of course, as he starts, you know, experiment, like wearing heels, he essentially gets kicked out of home. And
oh,
then
wow.
he meets up with these Ebony, Raymond, Dijon, and Heaven. Uh-huh. And they invite Ulysses to Saturday Church, a program that is held at this church every Saturday to feed and provide shelter for LGBT youth.
Oh,
and
cool.
While he's there, he then learns about voguing and that the whole entire culture. And just like, I mean, it's
and this is a musical?
Vogue musical.
Yes.
And what I love about this too is like it just hit such a chord. I've been volunteering with feeding, like this is just a real thing, because I've been volunteering on Sunday, not every Sunday night, but on Sunday nights at this LGBT youth homeless shelter, and
we're
feeding these LGBT youth. And it's so interesting because I just like, oh my god, it just when you see a story that also just cuts, like it's so real, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just like just seeing those images together, and I just really appreciate the story is being done. And
awesome.
It premiered at the Tribeca Films Festival in 2017, so this is a fresh
this is a new movie.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh,
so definitely.
Wow. How can we watch this one?
I don't know.
So it might be coming out soon, like wide release.
Yeah, you could check the YouTubes. Check the YouTubes. It might be on there.
Wow, good.
These movies, like, you're just like, oh, this is what to do on the weekend or tonight. Mm-hmm. Brother to Brother. Now, this one I'm so excited about because the name actually comes from Tongues United. So now you're getting a narrative.
It's getting,
Yeah, isn't that cool? Because Brother Tongues United, they open and there's like this, like, again, 90s beat poetry. They go, brother to brother, 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 brother to brother. And it's like this montage of like this black guy's lips and like these images of like black men and stuff.
Artsy.
And so, and then again, 90s beat poet film.
Yeah.
Right? And so this one is so great because it is starring none other than Marvel's The Falcon, aka Anthony Mackie.
Nice.
And this one's really cool. He
like
befriends
that guy.
And this came out in 2004.
Okay.
And this did really well at the Sundance Film Festivals and Lesbian and Gay Film Festivals, directed by Rodney Evans. Mm. And in this one, he befriends an elderly homeless man by the name of Bruce Nugent, and played by Roger Robinson. When you see the cast, you're like, oh, I've seen these people in other things. I can't name him. He plays like the older black guy in a lot of things.
Okay, So just like a character actor that you've seen before.
Yeah, you're like, oh, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy, he befriends this elderly homeless man who turns out to have been an important figure in the Harlem Renaissance.
Oh, cool.
And so he pretty much tells Anthony Mackie, who's like this young gay black guy in New York, and he sort of tells him his stories of other important Harlem Renaissance figures like Langston Hughes, Aaron Douglas, Wallace Thurman, Zora Neale Hurston, and his interactions with them, and just sort of talks about the challenges that he faced as a young black gay writer in the 1920s.
Mm.
And so it's sort of like a bridging the gap of the generations. So I think it's so important for us to hear the stories of generations who've gone before us, because we've lost so many in the LGBT community. And it's so important for us to hear the stories of those who've come before us, and also see and how far things have come. And then also think of like how we also can still relate with each other and some of the issues that are still here as well.
Yeah, pass it down. Pass it forward.
It kind of also plays like an adult after-school special, you know, learning about, like, the Harlem Renaissance.
Yeah, it sounds like it, where it's like, and here's Zora Neale Hurston, but still.
And And that's they do important. And they do like a reenactment. They go back in time, you know.
See,
and then
that's kind of cute.
It's really adorable. It's really adorable. Because I'm like Anthony Mackie. He's then reflecting on it, like as he's like sleeping with this guy, reflecting about the stories that this homeless man was telling him, you know.
Yeah.
And you can see Anthony Mackie kissing men and having sex with hot dudes. So I am
cool
into that.
That's right.
And you can find Anthony Mackie doing his thing on YouTube and the Amazons.
Right on.
All right. Rolling out towards the end here, we have Looking for Langston. Speaking of Langston Hughes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a good one.
Looking for Langston. Have you seen this one? Or you
I
know
haven't.
About this
I've
one?
Heard of it, though.
So it's an 1989 British black and white film directed by Isaac Julian. It combines, it's a short film that uses hybridization of documentary and scripted scenes to pay homage to the plight of, you know, black gay poet Langston Hughes, and also just showing just like his the challenges again back in those days of being you know this queer man within the African community and a celebrated man within the African community when queerness was not necessarily celebrated at that time at all. And this movie had a lot of controversy because it when it was released it had kind of near pornographic depictions of sex. And uses of Hughes. And so Langston Hughes' estate blocked the uses of the poetry. When it premiered here in the U.S., they had to turn down the volume of some of the poems that were read.
I did not know this. Okay, so maybe I just knew about the movie because I've heard about the controversy then.
So the estate was like, because they were like, they didn't get the rights for the poetry, so they'd have to like turn down the volume on
it. Ridiculous.
When the poetry was happening. But I think now I think later it was fully released
because
they're
like,
this is, And also you get to see, I think this guy is like playing, you get to see some quote unquote Langston Hughes butt. It's not really Langston Hughes, but it's like the dancer who's standing in for him and it's really nice. So there's that. You don't want to see no butt? You don't want to see no butt?
Our butts are butts.
But it's done in like, I want to see
you
that
know
butt.
What?
So if you
don't just listen to me. We're talking to the whole audience out there. So I'm sure you titillated somebody.
Yeah, get your titillation on and dust off your to see this one. You're gonna have to do some work though. You can't just get onto this. Is how good we have it. This is how good we have it, and we don't even know. And see, that's the thing is that when you are expecting something, you just are used to it being a certain way, and then the minute it's not, you're like, but how come it's that?
I know. You then know? It's like the world is tough, but
and it's like you're just this is actually it was good back then, and it's still good now.
Exactly.
So Looking for Langston is available on DVD.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to buy it.
So you're going to have to buy it or find a rental hut.
I don't even think I have a DVD player.
Or I don't think I do either. If you have a computer that maybe sells a DVD drive.
There you go.
You can play
use
off that. Of that. You have to do some work, but it'll be worth it because you'll see some butt. So
there you go.
See that butt.
A good representation of, you know, black, queer, poet. Art.
And poet, you're also what I love about this too is because Langston Hughes only like at the time was not this out and proud, you know, gay poet. He's like who recently got outed? What's that? Luther Vandross. So he's kind of like it's like a retcon of
Luther Vandross was. He was never out though. He was never out.
Right. See, that's the thing. And the same thing I think with Langston Hughes at the time, it wasn't like this. Like he was a glass closeter, I believe.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that, but I agree with you.
According to like this film, and that's why they wanted to do it was to like, it's sort of like to retcon and then celebrate this person and to give credit to some of these heroes. So last one is, I've talked about this once, I'm not going to talk about it lame. I definitely see this. It used to be on Netflix. It's not now, but it's on Amazon, iTunes, YouTube, Vudu.
Everything.
This movie is so inspiring, so amazing. It's called Tangerine.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sean Baker, it was shot on 3 iPhones.
Which
and
is
so
insane.
This is the movie that it's like you have no excuse that if you want to tell stories, tell your stories.
Yes,
because
do it.
This movie was shot on an iPhone. There's just literally no excuse. It's a story of a transgender hooker, her cheating boyfriend slash pimp, and just the world that they are living in. Mm. It takes a humorous look at the life of a transgender hookers, and it has so many rave reviews. It came out in 2015. Yeah. Amazing, amazing film. So definitely check it out. Oh, sorry. False alarm. Last one.
Okay. Yeah. Give us another one.
No, last one to hit it home with. Yes. This one's super interesting.
Okay.
Talk about intersectionality. This one is called Nas and Malik.
Ooh.
It is directed by Jay Dockendorf and stars Curtis Crook Jr. and Kerwin Johnson. Okay. And the film follows two high school friends, Nas and Malik, who spend a hot summer day bopping around Bedford, hustling lottery tickets, as well as trying to make sense of their new and highly secretive romantic relationship.
Ooh, this sounds fascinating.
Oh, just hold on to your butts. It's going to get even more.
Oh, wow.
Over the course of the afternoon, the boys is petty, though, illicit small time scheming along with their secretive dashes into alleyways to kiss sets a high strung FBI operative named Sarah Mickle on their tail.
Oh my gosh.
Having observed the teen's erratic and mountingly tense behavior, Sarah Mickle worries that the two may in fact be radicalized Muslims and surveils them as they go through their day.
Malik's
carefree afternoon starts to darken when they realize that they've given Mickle different alibis, and the other boys begin to panic about being uncovered by their families. So,
oh my god, layers on layers,
a series of unfortunate events, and they're just trying to like be, you know, gay teens just being gay teens,
yeah, in New York living their lives,
yeah. So, but it also has like again, I think the heightened level because of, you know, them, they're not just like, you know, two teens or two teens of color, but they're two Muslim teens, so it gets another, you know, they've got their family and their religion that's also like the fear of that, so it's such also interesting narrative that I think just never gets told, and that's on YouTube, Amazon, Vudu, and iTunes. Definitely check that one out.
Everything.
And it wasn't on their list, but it's on my list.
Yeah, what's on your list?
Noah's Ark Jumping the Broom.
Oh, let's not forget. Noah's Ark, classic logo, black, and they did gay television show.
It's like Sex and the City, but gay black men. And just really dope. And they did a movie, Jumping the Broom.
Just to layer it in, we're black still.
Yeah, and I just think it's like such a, because you know, I did not see Call Me by Your Name because I thought, you know, I didn't necessarily connect to that story. I didn't really pull to me, which I think is interesting for myself, that I think black narratives pull me more so than just white, like gay white narratives, because I feel like that's still does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm sure that makes sense. Yeah, you're looking really for something that connects to you more. I've heard that Call Me By Your Name is beautiful, though. So
I'm sure, absolutely. Again, on my list of airplane movies.
But you're looking for something that speaks to you.
Yeah, a little bit more deeply. I definitely will check it out. And also, I think it's so, like, again, look at all these stories that I think are just so much more, I think because these characters, these people have so many things going on. I think, like, again, we've seen so many white gay narratives. Not so many, because there's not a lot. But the ones that are told, the gay narratives that are told, tend to still be these white gay narratives. So I encourage everybody to go out there and check out, if you've seen one of, like, I challenge you within the next month, check out one of these, because again, for us to be able to live cohesively with each other and create empathy amongst each other, we need to see stories of people that are different than us. We need to see stories that are of us as well. So if you do fit into these demographics, check out your stories and get empowered by them, and get out there and see something not white.
Amen to that. Let's diversify your playlist.
Following the news is hard and it sucks.
How do you know which stories are important?
Which sources do you trust in this post-truth world of reactionary journalism?
I'm Brett Black.
And I'm Travis McElroy.
And we host a podcast called Trends Like These.
We cover trending news stories.
We debunk misleading clickbait headlines.
And we always try to throw in a little bit of good news.
In our quest for truth.
So join us every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
We'll be right back.
Closing it up, closing it up.
Mm-mm, yeah.
Mm-mm, closing it up like my legs.
There you go. Oh.
They were open. And I was trying to be classy as we ended it, unless you...
Thank you. You know what? I appreciate a little bit of more space on this bench.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, my man spread. You know what? Like, I got to give up to the Razzies. The Razzies did a... what's that thing when everybody dies on the Oscars? When people pass away.
Oh, memorandum.
A memorandum.
Yeah, you know, memoriam.
A memoriam. Yeah, that's it. That's a ticket. Mm-hmm. They did one for the careers of people who, like, Harvey Weinstein
shady.
And Kevin Spacey. So good.
That's not shady. I was thinking they were going to do somebody that did, like, bad movies, but people who actually deserved it.
They did it of just, like, people whose careers are gone, and we're, like, not sorry to see you gone because you're terrible.
Get out of here.
They've been mantled as a friend. They've been mantled from the industry. Ooh, okay. You heard it. So before we close, I forgot to mention this. I saw a landmark television event that changed my life.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
I love you so much. I saw the How to Get Away with a Scandal.
Yes, I watched it too. It was excellent.
Right? It was so good.
Okay, my first thought.
Okay, yeah.
It's going to be disappointing to everyone listening.
Okay, all right.
It was weird for me to think about Annalise and the Keating Five being in a country that's ruled by Melly. Like, it was weird.
Interesting. Yeah, okay.
Like, I know, it's disappointing. It's not like, of course, yeah, I'm going to talk about how they both read each other filth. That was awesome while they were getting their hair done in a beauty salon. And I love their scenes together. And both of them are amazing, beautiful actresses. But... it kind of, like, when you're watching Scandal, you're like, yeah, she's the president, but like, But then for some reason, when you bring in another show and it's a combined universe, you go, oh, she's the president.
Well, all this
like,
other
not
crazy
that it's
shit
bad,
was happening.
But, yeah, and like Fitzgerald Grant was the president when they're like killing like people. And like, it just felt weird. It felt weird.
It's a really terrible world. They live in a really terrible world because they're killing people and the government is corrupt as fuck because the government's also killing people. That Shondaverse is a really fucked up place.
Yeah, like for some reason, the fact that they combine those two shows to make it one big world and like it just made it more real to me that like, yeah, Olivia bashed a guy's head in with an aluminum chair and like this is their government. Like, I feel sorry for
Olivia also blew up a plane of she blew up a diplomat
and like they're literally kind of like everybody else is like, oh, Olivia, kind of miss you, and I'm like, she killed hella people, she almost killed you, like what?
The crossover event for me was so I love seeing those actresses work together. I wish more. I would love to see them just do every scene they were in together. I was just like eating it the fuck up. I thought it was
so good,
so interesting too. Because I remember when How to Get Away with Murder first came out, I was always thinking, I was like, ooh, what would happen if Olivia and Annalise Keating were to meet up? Annalise Keating was so boss in that first season that I was like, ooh, she would traipse all over little Olivia because Olivia was like not the full on attack dog that she is now.
I mean, they both are pretty jacked up when they meet each other. They're like licking the wounds, like, hey.
Which I thought was like, and it reinvigorated my love for both of the shows in a whole new level because it was like the perfect time for those two characters to come back to each other because, like you said, they are at their lowest beat up moment. Olivia's not who she used to be, and neither is Annalise. They both had crossed over to these weird sort of sides and so vulnerable.
Yes.
And to see, and it's interesting because in Annalise's world, everyone talks about how bougie she is, but when she's up against Olivia, like,
she
nope.
Is. She's country
not,
bumpkin.
Country bumpkin. And so it's just so interesting to sort of see that. And it relit my fire for Scandal. I also don't know why everyone is like, I don't know. Scandal's writing is like, I don't know why everyone is just like so like, fuck you, Olivia. They were like,
I do. She was a dick.
So she tried to kill someone a time or two for her country. I don't know. It's just your friend, ride or die. Aneke, if you tried to kill me and I wasn't still dead, you know what? I'd be like, all right, bygones, but don't try it again.
Well, that's nice of you. If you tried to kill me, I'd be like, we're not friends forever and you need to go
really?
To jail. Yes.
Oh,
that's
really?
A big ass deal.
You think I need to go to jail?
And then not only did she try to kill people, like she tried to kill Quinn. She was fine with her dad killing him, pretending that she didn't know to the other people planning her fucking wedding when she knew that she was like escaped or whatever. Mm-hmm. She also was like, when they had her on lockdown and tried to do like an intervention, she fucking lied to all of them and said that she was going to resign from the job, and then she didn't. And then she's like mind fucking part Jake all the time, where he's like a zombie. She's a beast. And we all want to see Olivia succeed. We all want to see her be back with her gladiators. But like the writers really they boxed themselves in a corner with this one.
Don't we need to, like you said earlier, we got to root for our Mary J. Blige's. We got to root for our Olivia Popes.
Oh, I'm rooting for Kerry Washington. I love Kerry Washington. But you know me. Olivia Pope is a mess.
I love a messy bad girl, especially a messy black bad girl. I love it. I am here. I am here for it. But also what I really love is Asia, the girl who plays Michaela. Yeah, she was great. Holding her own with Kerry Washington and not Annalise Keating, Viola Davis. She was holding her own. I love that she got to be in both of the crossovers.
Me too.
I do think, though, interesting, I think part of the reason why they introduced the Scandal I think the reason why they combine those universes is so it gives some of the Scandal characters a place to possibly go after Scandal ends.
I know one character that's definitely going to pop up in How to Get Away with Murder,
which is going to be crazy because he's like such a good person being around all this murder.
I know.
Which I think the show needs it because everyone's now corrupt on How to Get with Murder because they've all been involved in murder, and there's no person to be the like, wait a minute,
maybe we shouldn't be doing this, guys.
Or someone to keep a secret from because they're all in on it now.
I know. Oh, by the way, can we talk about how much of a powerhouse Viola Davis is? She is like a treasure that we need to fucking award everything to. Like, I can't even handle how she can just like say one word and give a look and it's just like shivers. She's such an amazing actress.
So talented. Yeah. And I was a little, because I was interested to see how she would dance with Kerry Washington.
Excellent.
I mean, I think Kerry Washington, I think, not like she needed that, but I'm sure she relished in getting to work with an actor like Viola because she was able to go toe-to-toe with her, you know?
Oh my God, so good. They were like, and you can tell that they loved doing it with each other. Like, it was like, I just felt it that they like, I could see like they would be like cut and they'd be like, ooh, and like sharing notes and talking. Yeah. Like, they had like such good chemistry that it was like super clear that they were getting along when they were performing.
And I think it was if you really look at it though, Nneke, what a monumental television history event. Nothing like this has ever happened. This is a historic moment. Two black women from two different shows
that award, they both lead.
Award that they both lead. They both have been nominated for awards. One of them has won. Written by a black, like produced by a black woman.
Yes.
The showrunner for How to Get with Murder is a gay white guy, but at least both of them are produced by a black woman, created by a black woman. Like, I mean, just what a monumental moment. This did not exist like 5 years ago.
No.
10 years ago, six years ago, huge. And like, I think like Scandal still is that trailblazing show that was like the first show that started a black woman since the 60s. So
it was amazing.
She kicked that door open.
Yes. Fucking Shonda, you really have created something beautiful. And this is like a nice little end cap to it. Though Jacqueline could have picked a better time to call Annalise. I'm just saying.
Oh, my God. But you know, also side-eyeing Annalise. Why'd you pick up the phone? Like, you're about to do this huge thing. And I was like,
and you get an unnamed caller. I see that. I'm like, oh, telemarketer. Nope.
Before I'm getting ready for a show, an hour before a show, sometimes 2 hours before a show, my phone goes on airplane mode. So if you're trying to come see my show, you don't know where you're going, good luck. Should have gotten that information before. Because I don't want someone pulling some Jacqueline shit.
Pulling a Jacqueline.
I don't want that because I know it could happen. And then I'm going to be in the corner crying, being like, Nneke, get me my vodka, and I gotta go perform at the Grammys or something, you know?
Oh God, I know. Jacqueline, you ain't shit. Why you do that?
You get out of here. And Jimmy Smits, get your life together.
Get your life together, Jimmy Smits. You're supposed to be so cute with Annalise.
I know. I was really rooting for that, but now he's a drugged out mess.
He's a mess.
And if you've not seen the show, catch up.
Time to watch it.
Because I was not going to hold off on this one. This was a monumental event that needed to be talked about. So catch up.
Plus, we didn't really give any spoilers, really, I don't think.
No, we didn't tell you that Michaela slept with the guy from Scandal.
Well, why did you, why, what, James?
Well, cat's out of the bag now, but catch up.
You were like such, like the past with Black Panther, you're like, I don't like to give spoilers. That's something that I never do.
For TV, I'm like, I don't have time. For TV, I'm like, you need to catch up, be on my speed, because I need to talk about it. But for a movie, I'll be like, okay. But it depends. It depends. It depends on the show. It really does. Like, if it's definitely like a show that like, it's like seasons on, like we're like, I've like seen like all four seasons of something, I would not. But something that's like so now and so immediate. Mm-mm.
Yeah. Okay. All
Can't
right.
do it. Can't do
I
it.
I get it. You know?
Well, thanks so much for listening.
Sorry. Oh my God. Oh,
yeah.
We did it.
We done did the damn thing. Get involved in the conversation. I'm hearing crickets, and I don't mean Sierra's fan club.
No, remember that.
You know what?
That's Team Cricket.
The Sierra crickets are probably cricketing up a storm for Sierra.
About Sierra, but not about Minority Corner. If there's any Sierra crickets that also like Minority Corner, tweet us.
And tweet her in it too. And be like, chirp, chirp.
Yeah.
We're here too. Chirp, chirp, Sierra. Listen to Minority Corner. So
yeah, we're Minority Corner with a K at Twitter.
Yeah. And we also have her on Facebook. You can get involved in the Minority Corner Kids Playground. And also, I love a shout out to a lot of listeners who are going back into our catalog and you're catching up. And we're loving to hear your responses. Thank you for that continued listen.
And that and the Minority Kid Playground is super active. There are no crickets going on there. You guys are sharing, talking to each other, sharing stories. It's really beautiful. So if you want like a safe place to go and share some information and get support, that's a great place to go.
Yeah. And also, let us know if there's any other Black LGBT movies that I did not include in the list that we should include. Let us know about those. And also, if there's any Indigenous books out there that you also know of, let us know if there's anything that we missed.
Keep a running tab of it, because I'm sure all of us want to know. We all want to share these things that we wouldn't necessarily have exposure to. So if you have something, if you're sitting on a pot of gold and you know about
share
it,
that
we
gold.
Don't. Yeah.
Share it up. Share it up.
It is.
Well, thanks so much for listening to Minority Corner, y'all.
Because together,
we're the majority.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.